So today I continue the presentation of a perturbation theory using the functional integral formalism and on the simple example of the interacting scalar phi 4 theory. So remember, the scalar phi theory is given by an action S of phi, which is integral d, so an integral of a space-time of the action for a free field with a mass m, plus an interaction term with a coupling constant j, divided by 4, factorial 4 for normalization times phi to the 4. Okay. So this is the action, and phi is a scalar field. So phi is a scalar real field. And for simplicity, I'm using the Euclidean theory in order not to deal with factor I and factor I epsilon. But you can go back to Minkowski easily, and I'll try to keep track of that. Okay, so we have seen that the interacting theory, the correlation functions in the interacting theory are going to be different from the correlation function in the free theory. First, because of course there is an interaction term, but also because the vacuum state is different from the vacuum state of the free theory, as you have seen in the through the canonical quantization formalism. Okay, so I explained very briefly last time that convenient and compact object to manipulate all the correlation functions, namely all the expectation value of products of phi operator, is the generating functional. So the generating functional is defined by a functional integral. So it's defined, it's a functional of a classical source field, so it's a function of x, like phi. Phi is a function of x, g of x, which is going to be used as a, you know, as a parameter to manipulate all the correlation functions. And it's defined by a functional integral, which is similar to the one we had defined before. It's exponential of minus 1 over h bar. It's minus 1 because I'm in Euclidean setting. I have the interacting action, and I had a coupling between the classical source g and the quantum field phi, which I denote, you know, compactly g dot phi. It means g dot phi means integral over space-time of g of x and phi of x. So this is a quantum field. So it's represented by this this field we integrate over in the functional integral. G is just a classical function. It's formal, but a classical function. Okay, so this is a functional of G. So this is and we have seen that just at the formal level, the expectation value of the field in the theory, phi x1 phi of xn, so expectation value of the field operators located at different points in space-time, are defined if you make just formal manipulation on this functional integral by taking functional derivative with respect to g. So they are given basically by delta over delta g of x1. This is a functional derivative with respect to the value of the source field g at point x1. So we get the phi of x1, which comes down of the exponential. Top. Then you apply those functional derivative on the generating functional, and you set, well, you normalize by Z with no source term. This is just a partition function. And here you set G equals zero after taking the functional derivative. So you see that up to this H bar factor that I'm going to remove to be a bit careful. So if you set just H bar equal one for simplicity, just simplicity, then you get this easy formalism. Okay. So this is the vacuum expectation value of products of operator. So this functional Z of G is a generating functional for the green function. Green functions. Correlation functions. Functions. Okay. Okay. So now, and one important point, by choice, we define this generating function by choosing here the measure for the free theory. So this is a measure integration for the free theory. For the free theory. Okay, so you get easily this very important formula by just formal manipulation. But this basically tells us that if you are able to compute, to make formal calculation using this generating functional, you are making just in one step manipulation and calculation on all the possible correlation functions involving phi operator of the phi-4 theory. Okay, so that's a generic principle. Okay, so now perturbation theory. Perturbation theory means performing a formal series expansion in the coupling constant G. So we consider that G is a small parameter and we make a formal expansion in powers of G in this exponential. Okay. So basically what you do is that you exactly as in the canonical quantization formalism using the interaction picture for the representing operator and fields, we just expand exponential of minus, well, let me get rid of that set of the H bar operator over G divided by factorial 4 integral d dx of phi 4 of x as a formal sum from k equals 0 to infinity of 1 over factorial k minus g divided by factorial of 4 to the power k and a product of integral of those objects. So basically I can write this as integral dd of x1 up to dd of xk of phi 4 of x1 up to product phi 4 of xk. So that's just a formal series expansion of the exponential. And now we compute for a given, I'm sorry, this is not g to the power 4, this is of course g to the power k, where k goes from 0 to infinity. Okay, and then we compute this object within the functional integral by making a commutation. So instead of computing integral of a d phi of this object, we compute, so instead of computing something which is integral over phi and a sum over k or some gk times some big coefficient. We replace this by sum over k, gk, integral d phi of the corresponding coefficient here, which is the product of those terms, and the exponential of the action for the free field plus the source term. So this is a perfectly, you know, easy to understand and to manipulate formal manipulation. We invert the functional integral with the series expansion in the complete constant. Okay, so, and once you do that, you just turn the crank and then turn the crank that you have learned to run the motor, and turn the crank means use Big theorem to compute in the free theory expectation value of products of phi 4 and products of phi, which comes from the original term. So for instance, if you want to compute products of operator of n operator, so here I put just z instead of in to use different notation for the position of the field operator we are interested in. If we are interested in computing this object in the interacting theory, basically, you have to compute product sums and products of integral of expectation value of z phi 1 phi of z n times phi 4 of x 1 phi 4 of x k. But in the free theory, this is exactly the same manipulation that what you did in QFT1. And if you are a bit confused, just look at the lecture notes that you have, where it's done in full detail, step by steps. Okay, so this is a way you compute what is called the correlation functions of fields involving and phi operator in the interacting theory. So what we are computing is just what we call the Green function. So we can represent it something like that. We have some big object. That's what we want to compute. You have an external field located at z1, z2, zn. Ah, this is 4:30. Time to go home. Okay, now we can resume. So we are computing, yes?
I had one question regarding, are there any formal caveats with exchanging the summation and integral?
Of course, there is a big caveat. I'm going to discuss that without any proof, but that's a very serious problem, which is very important. So let me come back a bit later. Okay, so computing this object, this is just a full correlation function. And anticipating the Feynman diagrammatic representation, we represent this correlation function in the interacting theory by this kind of blob. It's a function of the position of the n field. A function of z1, z2, zn, where each z is a vector in space-time. Okay. So this is a generic correlation function. Okay, so now let me go to the caveat. Caveat, big caveat. Inverting this and this is not at all obvious, because in general, when you invert, you have infinite integrals or a series, inverting sums or inverting integral is mathematically non-trivial. And in fact, this is not trivial because, for instance, the sum of a k of gk here We are just expanding an exponential. So you get a minus. Okay. It's clear that it's an alternating sum because G is positive. And there is a 1/(k). It's a term of order 1/(k). So it defines a series which is a function which is analytic for a given phi in the whole G complex plane. So it's an entire function. Of the coupling constant. Now it turns out, for reasons that I won't explain today, but which come from the nature of perturbation series in quantum theory, when you invert and you compute sum over k of d phi, so you integrate over phi, what you get is a term over the sum over k. So term over the k is still has its minus 1/(k) factor, but you get terms which have of order factorial k instead of 1/(k). So this is a divergent series in the coupling constant. Its radius of convergence is zero. So this seems, you may be very worried about that, but that's a phenomenon which is very common both in quantum physics and even in classical physics. In celestial mechanics, in classical optics, you have a lot of series when you have a small parameter, which are in fact only asymptotic. So this is in fact only an asymptotic series in G. It turns out that this perturbative expansion gives you a good approximation where when G is small enough, but the rest is much bigger than when you have a convergent or analytic series. But there are resummation procedures. There are whole mathematical tools and theories which tell you when you can deal with such asymptotic series and reconstruct the function, or when you cannot reconstruct the function. And it's still a very active, well, basically this goes back to the end of the 19th century, maybe even before, because when you study Bessel functions, which come from optics, you already have that kind of problems. But it's still a very active field in the contemporary mathematics and in physics. Okay, so this was a caveat. Things are not as simple, but still we are not on a completely unsafe ground. And maybe I'll come back to that when we'll discuss a bit instanton if I have time at the end of the lecture. Okay, so let's come back to this. Right. If you used the Wieck theorem, that's exactly the same game that what you do using the canonical formalism. And basically you have the sum. So this term is the sum of our expansion when you get phi of x1, phi of xn, I'm sorry, let me call this z1, zn in the interacting theory. This is a sum over k, g over k, and then you get expression which are expressed in terms of Feynman diagrams. The Feynman diagram has a way to represent how you apply this theorem by taking pairings of phi operators. You get a sum over Feynman diagrams or Feynman graphs. Okay. And you have, let's call them G. It's a J, J. And you get an amplitude. So you have an amplitude or integral, rather a Feynman integral associated to each graph, G. And in addition, you have some combinatoric factors coming out from the fact that the different diagrams may come out from different contraction. So you have something which is called the symmetry factor, which comes from combinatorics. Okay. And of course, the amplitudes of the graphs, you can compute it, at least you have a way to compute it. It's given by Feynman integrals using the Feynman diagrammatics. So the Feynman diagrammatics is that you have propagators which are the Green's function. If you have 2 points, let's call it y1 and y2. This is g0 of y1, y2, and in Fourier transform is 1/p² + m². We are in Euclidean space, so you have the vertices. So to each interaction term, to each G phi force theorem is represented by a vertex. So this is a vertex G. So you have 4 legs because we are in a 4 legs. And you attach 4 propagators to each of those internal vertices. 4 legs because we are dealing with phi to the 4. If we were dealing with a phi cube theory, we would have 3 legs. If we were dealing with a phi 6 theory, we would have 6 legs, okay? And each vertex is associated to a phi 4 of x. So there is a factor x here. So the vertex is located at the point x, you see? And you integrate. There is the integration associated to each internal vertex. Okay. And in addition, the external vertices phi of z1, phi of zn. So this is a phi 4 of x is represented by a vertex. A phi of z, which is an external vertex, is just represented by an external vertex where you attach a propagator. Okay, so this is an external vertex. And this external vertex, you do not integrate. Because z is fixed. So that's exactly the same rule than the one you derive using the canonical formalism. So I won't repeat that today, but if you want to check everything, this is explained in the lecture notes. So if you have questions, just ask me. Basically, those are the same rules than the rules you have seen in QFT1 and QFT2 for QED. Okay. And so you have a representation in momentum space, in position space, where So propagator is a function of the difference between the position of the two vertices to an internal vertex. You integrate over the position of the vertex, and the external vertices are fixed. And if you use a Fourier transform representation, you go in momentum space. So in momentum space, the propagator, in fact, now carries an internal momentum P in and an external momentum P out. But there is a delta function of P in plus P out divided by 1 over P squared plus M squared. For the vertex 5, the interaction vertices, you have 4 momenta. Momenta P1, P2, P3, P4, getting out of the legs of the propagator, but you have a delta function, delta of P1 plus P2 plus P3 plus P4. Okay, that's conservation of the momenta. I'm not writing, there are 2 pi factors of normalization coming from the Fourier transform, so this is conservation. Momenta. In fact, both momenta get in. So this is not out and in. This is rather P1 and P2. And this is P1 plus P2. So the sum of the momenta is vanishes. So the momenta that comes in here comes out here. Okay. So you have conservation of momenta within the propagator. They are like wires. You have conservation of momenta, the sum of the momenta are vertices. So this is like, you know, rules of conservation of current in an electric wire. And in addition, an external vertex, you know, has some momenta PA. If this is the vertex A, it has a momenta that enters in the vertex and which is associated to the fact that in Fourier transform, we are considering correlation function of the Fourier transform of the field PA, which is the Fourier transform of phi of ZA, if we have a vertex A. Okay, so those are exactly the same rules that you learn in QFT1 and use in QFT1 and QFT2. Okay, so now let me discuss a bit more the diagrammatics, because I'm going to introduce now other generating functional. So I will keep this. I'm going to keep this. I'm going to keep this, and now the question is, what are the kind of Feynman diagrams? When you compute Z of G, the generating functional, in fact, when you expand, what you get is a sum over all possible Feynman diagrams. So all diagrams. But you have seen already in QFT1 that in fact Feynman diagrams can be separated into components which are connected. So for instance, you have connected diagrams. And connected diagrams are diagrams where all the vertices of the diagrams are connected by a series of propagators. So for instance, connected diagrams. This diagram, which is a vacuum diagram, or what is called this diagram, which are vacuum diagrams. Okay, then you have, for instance, basic, well, the propagator is a diagram. The first non-trivial diagrams, so these are external. That's the first non-trivial diagrams in the Phi 4 series given by this diagram called the tadpole. And then you have some other one, like this one. So those are connected diagrams. This is a connected diagram, but this is a two-point diagram. And then if we go to the diagrams which have four external legs, what you have is this diagram. So this is basically one vertex associated to connected by a vertex, or then you have this one, which is quite important. So it has two internal vertices and four external vertices. So those are 4 points connected diagrams. Okay. And then you have disconnected diagram, which are made out of an ensemble of connected diagrams connecting all the external vertices for the green functions you want to compute. Okay, so Z of G is given by the sum of all Feynman diagrams. That's the first rule. So Z of G is all diagrams. Now it's easy to see that Z of zero is given by all vacuum diagrams only, because you have no external legs. If you set G equal to zero, the partition functions. Therefore, Z of G divided by Z of zero is all diagrams, but without vacuum diagrams. Okay. But they can be disconnected. So now you may be interested into asking, basically, is there a way to compute only the connected diagrams? How can we get only the connected diagrams? Because basically, if you know all the connected diagrams, their amplitudes, their sum, then you can reconstruct the whole theory. Well, so the fact is that there is a generating functional for the connected diagrams. And fundamental results of about combinatorics and generating function is that the generating functional for connected diagrams is something very simple. This is just the logarithm of the partition function. So you can write, let us write W of G, the same G as Well, here I'm reintroducing the edge bar, but you can set edge bar to zero, and log of Z. Well, basically, this means that if you know W of G, you take its exponential and you get Z of G at the same thing. It means that Z of G is just exponential of 1 over h bar W of G. Okay. And it turns out that W of G is just the sum of the contribution of all connected diagrams. So basically, this is a sum over all the vacuum diagrams, but connected. This one plus this one plus the connected diagrams with two external legs, and you have a G associated to each one. You have a G here. So this doesn't depend on G. There is a G here and there is G. And then you have a sum of all the connected diagrams with four external legs. So there are four Zs, so there are four Gs. Plus, et cetera. Okay. And basically, if you assume that this is true, you have sum of our connected diagrams, you write the exponential of W of G. You see, then you get one plus connected diagrams plus connected two diagrams plus connected four diagrams. And then you have one half of the square of this, namely you have two connected diagrams, two vacuum diagrams, or one vacuum diagrams times two. Or you have, etc. So you see that you reconstruct, well, with some symmetry factor, you reconstruct the contribution of, you know, of diagrams which have two connected parts, or three connected parts, or four connected parts, just by expanding the exponential in terms of the diagrams, if you assume that those are connected diagrams. So that's basically the idea how it works. So I'm not going to give a detail. It's important to understand the mechanics. And basically, the symmetric factors come from the fact that you may have diagrams which belong to the same class. So basically, the idea is this. You see?
I am slightly confused. Yes. When we compute Z of G, Z of yes. J, we also have with exponential action, the exponential yes. free action, we also have, because we have only expanded the phi 4 term. So with the yes. exponential action, we also have J into phi integral, right?
Yes.
So, but if that J into phi integral is there, then each of those perturbative term is not just a correlation.
You are right. I've been a bit sketchy, so I put some technical, not difficulty, but some technical detail under the rug. You are right. In fact, what you get when you compute this is G of G, I've not taken into account integral of a G of G zero of phi exponential of minus the action of the free field, which is Z zero. So somehow this expansion is Z of G divided by Z of G zero. Z of zero. So in fact, this is true if you add to this if you consider that W of zero is just h bar log of z of zero. But remember, for the free theory, we have a free theory. So z of zero is just basically the determinant of minus the Laplacian plus n squared, the formal determinant of this differential operator to the power 1/2. Okay. And therefore, W of zero is up to h bar. Well, let me take care of h bar for simplicity. This is the log of a determinant. But the log of a determinant to the power minus 1/2 is minus 1/2 the log of the determinant. So this is minus 1/2 the log of a determinant. And now, at least for matrices, the log for finite dimensional matrices, the log of a determinant is a trace of the log of the matrix. So you can rewrite this as trace of the log of the operator minus delta plus m squared. Okay. And if you include that into this operator, then this is perfectly consistent. So I'm not going to show here how you compute this object, but you can make sense of it, and I'm going to discuss that a bit later. Okay. So in fact, you have to add this into this term. Yes.
Means before coming to say computing W of J, even when we when we compute say Z of J, in that Z of J we have the exponential free action into and then there is a phi J into phi term, and then we have all the fields, right?
Yes.
In perturbative expansion, but we know that
we have everything.
Yeah, but we know that the expectation value of those fields is the Green's function if that J was zero only. If J was not zero, then that is not the free
if J is on zero, you have exponential of J phi. And you first expand in J.
There is a
J associated to each. So if you set G equals zero, you get the sum over the connected diagrams.
Mm-hmm.
If J is non-zero, you look at the term over the J times J, and you get the sum over the connected diagram with two external legs. You go to
The G and J, I'm getting confused. I'm talking about
The coupling constant.
No, not coupling constant. No, I'm talking about
the source.
The source, yes.
Yes.
So my question is that if you have exponential into free action plus the source, and that quantity is integrated over different fields,
that is not
the correlation function of free field, right? Correlation function of free field is only when you set J equals zero.
No, but when you set the source term to zero, after having derivating twice.
I'm talking about the formal definition of the correlation functions in free theory. That is functional integral, exponential action, and into the fields. Only that much.
Yes.
Into the phi one phi. But now when we are saying that, when we are saying the formal definition in the interacting theory, when we are calculating Zj, means of the source, in that you have the exponential of action, and you also have exponential of the source. And then you have all the fields.
Yes, but remember what I did last time on Friday. On Monday. I computed explicitly for the free field this object, because I computed Z of G for the free field. So for G equals zero, let's call it Z0 of G for the free theory. G equals zero. I computed Z0 of the source J. And I showed it was Z0 when you have no source term, which is given by this, And then I get exponential of 1 half something what I wrote j times the inverse of delta plus m squared minus, so the inverse times j. And that's it. That's an exact calculation because it comes from a Gaussian integration. And what is this object? This is integral dz1, dz2, j of z1, j of z2. And this is the kernel of this operator. So this is the propagator. So this is the free propagator between the point z1 and z2. You see, so now when you take the log W0 of G, which is, well, H bar here is set to zero, what I get is that log of Z0, so I get W0, well, this is not a good definition because this is, I get this object, you see? Here is G. No, that's okay. I get W0 of zero. W0 of zero, which is just the determinant for the free theory. Plus 1/2 of G times the propagator J. And that's the only connected diagram which exists in the free theory. The only connected diagram in the free theory. You see? So this is perfectly consistent with what I explained very briefly. You see?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So if you know to compute this object in general, you are done. Now, let me finish. I still have about 10 minutes more. So in fact, you can go further and analyze the perturbation theory by seeing there are more fundamental building blocks. And there are more fundamental building blocks which are called the irreducible diagrams. An irreducible diagram is a diagram that you cannot cut if you remove one line. So for instance, you see that if you remove this line, it's still connected. If you remove any of one of those lines, it's still connected. You have to remove four legs. So those are irreducible. Now, this diagram is not irreducible because if you remove these legs, you have the two external vertices which are disconnected. Is it clear? I remove this. I get a disconnected diagram made out of just two single vertices. That's what is called irreducible. These two, if you remove this diagram, so those diagrams are not irreducible. But this sub-diagram is irreducible. You see? This sub-diagram is irreducible. Here, this vertex is irreducible. But the whole cross diagram is not irreducible because if I cut any of its line, you cut it into two pieces. This diagram is not irreducible, but this one, this subdiagrams, the two propagators, the two lines that connect the two internal vertices construct an irreducible diagram because if I consider this subdiagram, if I remove one line, the two diagrams are still connected by another one. You see? And if you go further, you find example in the lecture notes, and I think you have seen them with Van. You can check, for instance, that this diagram this is a diagram that appears in 5-4 theory at second order. This is irreducible because I cut here, this is irreducible. And this one, well, there are more tricky ones. For instance, this one, is also irreducible. But you may also have diagrams which are made out of several pieces which are irreducible. For instance, in the two-point diagrams, you have this one. Which is made out of two pieces which are irreducible. You see, while this one has one piece which is irreducible only. And basically, if you think a bit about the construction, you'll see that in fact, any connected diagram. So any connected diagram is a tree whose vertices are irreducible. And so you see that this is a tree with one irreducible part. This is a tree where this is an irreducible part. So you can see that this one. So basically, so for instance, you know, a two diagram is something where here you have an irreducible, here you can have a propagator, here you can have an irreducible, etc. So you can have a line. So that's a simple, very simple tree, a tree with just a trunk, and you have irreducible part. A four-point diagram basically can be something like that. You can have an irreducible part here. Well, I'll start to draw probably too small. So let me just do this. A four-point diagram basically is going to be a chain of irreducible parts. Up to an irreducible part which has four legs. Of course, you may have zero, one irreducible part, or you may have three, etc. You see? And if you go to six connected diagram with six vertices, it's more complicated, but then you have a more combination, more possible trees, because for four diagrams, you can have trees. Well, basically a tree is like that, or it can be a tree like that. For a 6-point. So you have, so your external vertices. Here you have some irreducible part. Here you have some irreducible part, and you may have some beads of irreducible beads along each of the propagator, etc. So in fact, the more fundamental diagrams are the irreducible diagrams. Okay. So now I'm just getting to define what is the generating function for those irreducible diagrams? Well, let's write it here. Okay. So we have seen that W of G is a generating function for the all the diagrams. We have seen that W of G, which is logarithm of Z of G, it's a connected diagrams. And the question is there a generating function for the irreducible diagrams? In fact, there is one, and it's a very important object in quantum field theory, which plays also a role in statistical mechanics, in statistical field theory, etc. So that's an important. So the generating function, functional or irreducible diagrams and amplitudes, which is in fact a fundamental object to construct out everything, is called the effective action. Or sometimes the effective potential. Effective potential is more the language used in statistical mechanics, and effective action is more used in QFT. Okay, so the effective action is in fact also a functional of a source term. But it turns out that the source terms better not to call it G. So we have a generating functional, it's called, is denoted by a capital gamma. Well, that's terminology. And it's a functional of a source term, which is a classical field. So phi is a classical field. It's a function of the position in space-time. And in the same way, when you take functional derivative with respect to phi, basically, if you compute functional derivative, with respect to phi of x1 delta of a delta phi of xn of gamma of phi at phi equals zero, what you get is a sum over the irreducible diagrams which have some external vertices where you can, plug external legs to build irreducible diagrams. And you have basically one, two, up to n, what's called truncated legs that you can plug on the diagram. For instance, you see this diagram as this diagram has two legs that you can plug. This one two, this one has four legs, this one has four, etc. Okay. And you can plug those external legs at point with position x1 up to xn. Okay. And so basically, if you know this functional, you know all the amplitudes or the integrals of the amputated diagrams. And I used a phi, which is basically so phi is a capital, is a phi Greek letter, so it's denoted the phi in when you do tech or LaTeX. And this phi is another variant of phi used. It was used in some books in Greek. I never did classical Greek in high school. It's called var phi. So it's another way to write the letter phi, and it can be used in different alphabets. You know, Greeks were very divided in independent cities, fighting against each other, except when they had an invader, and even then, which invaded like the Persians. And so there were some cities which are different characters and alphabets and different languages, slightly different. Okay, anyway, so this var phi is a classical phi, where phi is a quantum field. And let me end up here by just the main results that I'm going to explain last time. What is the relation between W of G and gamma of R phi? Well, it turns out that the relation between those two objects is a transformation between function, which is very important in physics and in mathematics, which is called a Legendre transform. And what is the Legendre transform? You start from W of G. You consider its functional derivative with respect to the source term G at the point X of W of G. Okay. Well, you expect that this is the expectation value of the field phi at the point X, but we do not set J equal to zero. So in fact, this is the expectation value of phi in the theory whose action is not S, but S minus G phi. So that's expectation value, vacuum expectation value in the quantum theory with action S minus G phi with G, J non-zero. So we have changed the theory by adding this external source term. Okay. And let us call this var phi of X. We define var phi of X by the functional derivative with respect to J of X of W of G. So this is a function which depends on G. I'm sorry, on J. If J is non-zero, if you change J, phi of X changes. So it's a functional of J. And it's a non-local functional. If you change J at a given point, var phi of X changes everywhere in space because the theory has interaction. Okay, so now I just write a last equation and we are going to discuss it tomorrow. Then the relation between gamma is just that the functional, which is the functional of var phi, which is a generating function of var phi, which is the effective action, the generating functional for the connected function, is just the function g times the function j times the function var phi minus w of g. So you see, you start from a functional of J. You compute a function var phi, which is a functional of G. we multiply this function by j. As usual, this is integral of j of x times phi of x. And we compute this combination. So it's still, you can view this as a functional of j, but then you make just a change of variable. We change the variable. And going, instead of considering that the variable is j, we consider that the function, the variable is phi. Okay. And now we get a non-trivial functional of var phi. And now in this expression, g is considered as a functional of var phi. And therefore, w of j is a functional of var phi. And this combination is precisely the right generating functional. Okay, so I'm going to not to derive exactly, but to show you on one example next time how this works and why you get a generating functional. But let me finish, if I have a give me 30 seconds, by the fact that this Legendre transform is an object that you know very well in physics, for instance, simply in thermodynamics. You see, when you write that, I don't know if it's the enthalpy, I think it's the enthalpy, you know, when you change from temperature and volume variable, temperature and volume variable into temperature and pressure in thermodynamics, you go from the energy to the enthalpy. And the relation between those two is given by exactly by the same kind of Legendre transform. Instead of considering the property of a system of a gas, not as a function of its temperature and its volume, but the temperature and the pressure that you apply on the gas, then the physics is described by the enthalpy instead of being described by the internal energy. And so on. You go from the energy to the free energy by considering that instead of the temperature, you consider the conjugate parameter to the temperature, which is the entropy, and so on and so on. So Legendre transforms are everywhere in classical physics and also in quantum physics. And tomorrow I'm going to show by a simple explicit calculation, how you can show that this works for the phi-4 theory for those kind of those diagrams, the one that I described here. This diagram, and higher diagram. Okay, thank you. Yes?
Just below Legendre transform, you wrote
yes.
Wj is del by del j, Wj.
Yes.
What went on there? Like, I see how we get to phi of x, but should there really be W of j on the left under Legendre transform?
Well, for this Legendre transform, yes.
Yeah.
You were you expecting something else? Something more?
I think there's an extra W of j equals in the bottom corner at the board.
You mean here?
Bottom right. You're right. Just under Legendre transform.
What?
Where you wrote Legendre transform, under that there's W of J equals.
I'm sorry. Why did I write that? I am sorry. I start from W of G. Then I take its derivative. I don't know why I wrote an equal. I start from W of G. I consider its functional derivative. And this allows me to define this field phi of X. which in fact correspond to the expectation value of the quantum field of the theory at point X when G is not set to zero. Yeah, I'm sorry. This was a, well, let's say a typo, or probably a typo of the mind. But thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so thank you and see you tomorrow, where I'm going to detail and give an example where you'll see the power of the functional integral. Because up to now I've given just, you know, some formal manipulation and doing a bit of unwaving to explain how combinatorics works. But we start to do some real calculation which replace combinatorics and recover the combinatorics of Feynman diagrams using functional integral calculations. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.